listening to Stepping Out, the 12-step radio program on the air. I'm your host, Kevin, filling in for Drew. This edition of Stepping Out, we're focusing on crystal meth. Our next guest up is Adam. Hello, Adam, and welcome to Stepping Out.
Hi, how are you?
Pretty good. So, Adam, how did you get started doing drugs, man?
I'm a native New Yorker, and the show's being live here in New York. And so I grew up here, and unlike most New Yorkers, I would say that who grew up during the 80s, I was never offered drugs. I went through my entire high school career never even knowing where they were. I know people who did them, but I was never exposed to them. And I was always hoping to come across them, but it never actually happened.
Looking for the freebies, man, huh?
you know, there are those people that in New York, when you're walking through a park, that they'll whisper under their breath, coke, crack, X, K.
Right.
And no one ever said anything to me. So I must have looked like a complete naive or like an idiot or somebody who wouldn't do it. And so I think for me, the fact that I was a really good boy. I was I did my best to be perfect and what I thought everyone else wanted. But at the same time, that really made me want to be bad and wanted me to kind of go the opposite way. So I needed a way to balance it out.
The good boy wants to prove he's a bad boy, is that it?
Exactly. when I went to college, my first year of college, I drank a little bit. I came out officially and as gay. And it wasn't until in between my sophomore and junior years of college when I'd come back to New York and I would go out dancing with my friends and I was given ecstasy on a Memorial Day weekend. To kind of give you an image of the first time I ever did hard drugs, I was at a bar with my friend and there was some guy who was there who was hitting on my friend. My friend went to the bathroom and the guy popped a pill while my friend was in the bathroom. And I was like, what's that? And he said, oh, it's speed. It was prescription amphetamine. And I'm like, oh, he's like, do you want one? I'm like, sure. So I take it. I don't know this person at all. Pop the pill. And then my friend comes back and he leaves. And the guy who had no interest in me decides to take off. So I'm there, slightly drunk, now all hyped up. And nowhere to go. So I end up going out dancing, running into a friend, and I go out dancing with him. I meet this guy. We're dancing together. Then all of a sudden, he says that he and his boyfriend and their friends are going to this other club. I was a little surprised that he had a boyfriend since I hadn't seen this person all night. But, I wound up going to another club with them when they started doing ecstasy. They gave it to me. Again, I don't know these people. They gave me ecstasy. They gave me K. And that's kind of where everything started. In one night, I went from doing nothing, no drugs. I think I smoked pot twice in my life to having taken three drugs from complete strangers, having sex with them in my parents' house while they were away. And my friends later on were these people could have tied you up and killed you. And I was oh, yeah, I guess so. But they didn't. And so everything was fine.
Ecstasy makes you want to have sex, right?
Ecstasy actually doesn't know. Ecstasy is more it makes you love everybody. You kind of want to be really kind of huggy and touch, but sex is sometimes less. It doesn't necessarily it doesn't work quite as well. Crystal, which is the drug that I ended up kind of hitting bottom on, makes you want to have sex, and okay. That goes true for straight people, gay people, just about everyone I know who's used crystal at some point. Once they make the connection between the drug and the sex, it kind of clicks in, and things go just take off from there. To kind of fast forward. I spent much of my 20s doing ecstasy and cocaine as my primary drugs. And it wasn't – I had a boyfriend for about 6 years, and we would, do cocaine on the weekends and Friday and Saturday, and then all of a sudden it would be Thursday, Friday, Saturday, then Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. Then the week – the week was really only Tuesday.
Straight for one.
And then we'd stop. And then, eventually it would creep back up. And then we had this kind of repeating pattern. Alcohol consumption increased dramatically. By the end of our relationship, we'd go through, a big bottle of vodka like every 2 or 3 days, a couple grams of coke. I mean, our relationship was over. And right around the time that our relationship was ending, we had like an open relationship, which meant I was like could have sex with other people. I ended up smoking crystal with a guy I met for sex, and it was the second time I'd smoked crystal. I'd done it once before, about a year before, and from the first time I did it, I knew that it was something I had to like stay away from, because smoking it, for some reason, like it made me feel like I'd never felt before. It made me feel just completely like my body was alive, and it was it was great.
You found something that was just too good.
It was something that was too good, but I stayed away from it. You know, the week after I had done it, I was literally almost suicidal. I was so depressed. And so I was like, okay, this is not good. I need to stay away. Well, a year later, I end up meeting this guy. We he's doing it. I decided to do it with him. 3 days later, I had my own supply, my own pipe, and I became a daily user. I mean, it was that fast. My relationship ended because it was ending, not specifically because of my crystal use. And my job, it was 2002. The company I worked for was letting off hundreds of people, and I was let go among them. And I proceeded to spend the next 6 weeks smoking crystal and having sex basically nonstop. I would sleep for like 5 or 6 hours and then be up for 2 days and sleep for 3 or 4 hours and be up for another 2 days. And that was kind of what I did.
That was a pretty good binge, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty good. And I thought I was having fun. And for me, what ended up happening was I was in business school at the time. I was in business school at night. And I basically, my second semester, I had smoked my way through it. Like, I would go to the bathroom during class and smoke in the bathroom. They had computers in the hallway, and I would go online and look for sex, so to meet up with people right after class. So, like, I mean, like, and I had no qualms about any of this. And one night I was in my apartment with a guy, and I was talking to him about what was going on, and he looked at me and he said, he says, it feels like you kind of are at a place where like things could go either way. He says, take it from me. And he turns out he was much younger than me. I was 28 at the time, and he was like 22. And he said, it only gets worse from here. And he said, do something about it now if you can. And he said to me what I'd been thinking in my head. And so after he left, I ended up making a phone call, finding out about CMA, which was a 12-step group for crystal meth. And I joined, and I went to my first meeting, high, because it was the only way I could get there. And my original sobriety date was May 5th, 2002. And you know what? I stayed sober for almost 2 years. And I was able to get through business school. I was able to start moving forward with my life. But I would love to tell you that my story kind of stopped there and went and got better, but it didn't. I didn't want to change. And so there reached a point in my recovery when I had to, I was faced with the reality of having to change and kind of not wanting to, and so I ended up being this kind of conflict, and I started getting really angry at people in the program and finding it more distant. I ended up suffering from a depression, which I was later diagnosed with. And, on my 30th birthday, I had almost 2 years clean. I decided to leave the fellowship. And so I left the fellowship. Within a week, I was back to daily use. And from there, it quickly went downhill. I went from smoking crystal to injecting it. In the past, I'd only be up for 2 days, and now I was up for 5, 6, 7 days at a time. I no longer was talking to my family. I started to escort as a way of making money, even though I had a business degree. And it wasn't until the Wednesday before Thanksgiving of 2004, when I literally thought the world was after me, and I kind of had a psychotic break, that I was able to call a friend from program who I had helped originally. And he helped me get admitted to a psych ward. So I spent Thanksgiving of 2004 on a psych ward. I ended up there because I'd had a very long binge, and I'd been injecting crystal for basically a month. You know, I'd kind of pass out for like a half a day or whatever, and then I'd kind of, you know. The only time I stopped was when I passed out, ran out of money, ran out of drugs, and I would, you know, and then you'd figure out a way of making, you know, I wasn't paying my rent, but I had money to, you know, to get drugs. So my parents had to come and visit me on the psych ward and in 2004, and that was when they found out about my addiction. They didn't know about my my past use, and they didn't know about my original recovery. You know, when there are some kind of beautiful things about, you know, my kind of that era of my story. When I'd been sober for those 2 years originally, I had done, I was a sponsor, and so I had a couple of sponsees. And my first sponsee actually was the person who picked me up from the psych ward when I was released on that Monday. He had almost 2 years clean. He was doing great. And, you know, there's something wonderful about the people who I had helped so much when they first came in, because I had been in when the fellowship was relatively small, and I had helped a lot of people. Those people were there to help me when I needed it. The person I called to help me get into the psych ward, and one of my friends who also helped me, were two people that I befriended, you know, when I had time and when they were new. And so, you know, it really did come back to me. And that's been very important to know that, you know, the kind of it does come full circle. You know, the effort and the kind of the happiness and the good things that you share with other people, you know, are, you know, it does come back. You know, I would love to tell you again that my story's ended there, that I, you know, I had a horrible bottom. You know, I was coming out of the psych ward. I went into an outpatient rehab, and, you know, I really started getting things together. But 7 months into that, 7 months clean, I was having sex with this guy, and he really wanted me to, you know, do some crystal because he wanted me to continue. And I had, they call this the moment, the blank spot in your, a momentary blank spot. And I had this kind of, I don't know why, but I just said, what the hell, you know, I'll just come back, you know, to the rooms. I'll just like start again, or I won't tell anybody, even better. I'll snort it, and I'm, you know, I won't tell anybody. Well, I snorted it, didn't tell anybody for a day. And a day later after that, I bought needles. I didn't even have drugs, but I bought the needles so that whenever I found the drugs, like hooked up with the right person. And so I ended up on a five-day binge injecting. You know, I struggled a lot last year. Most of the end of 2005, I would get 30 days together, and then I would relapse. I would get 2 weeks together, and I'd relapse. My last relapse was at the end of October in 2005. And, you know, I heard something in a meeting recently that rang so true to me. It was, you know, what drugs used to do for me, now they were doing to me. They used to give me confidence. They used to make me feel strong and powerful. Instead, I felt everything I'd worked in my life to become, they had taken away from me. Like, I became insecure, unconfident, became like the complete opposite of everything that I ever wanted to be. And I don't know why, but this last time, I was willing to make changes in my life, and I was willing to become a different person. You know, I can honestly say that I am the happiest I've ever been. Now, that doesn't mean that there are things in my life that are all, you know, wonderful. I didn't win the lottery. I didn't get lots of gifts, and I didn't get, you know, they have this thing called, you know, cash and prizes. You know, the slogan or things you hear in the program, you know. For me, the prize is that I can say that I like myself today. And it's taken me 32 years to be able to say that. You know, people look at me, and physically, people have an impression of me, You know, I know I'm attractive, but I have a hard time saying that. Like, I know there are a lot of things outwardly that people make assumptions.
Yeah,
but
for the benefit of the people who can't see you, you are a good-looking guy. You are built. You're like you're like a muscle man kind of guy. You're like Adonis.
And I do porn. So like you know I you know like I know I've had people like you know people pay to see me have sex.
Made a lot of money escorting, huh?
Well, and also like doing films. But the thing that for me that made you know that was never enough because I used to live under the theory that if enough people like me, then maybe I'll like myself. But the reality is that there's not enough people in the world to like me to make me like myself. And, you know, the reason one person likes you might be the exact reason why another person doesn't. So I had to realize that I had to get off that train if I ever wanted to like myself. And, you know, so yeah, it's nice if people like me. It's nice if they think I'm a good person. But that doesn't change the fact that I know that I'm a good person and that I do like myself. And that's been a really – that's been the biggest gift for me.
Do you think that's why you had the relapses, because you didn't fully accept yourself?
Oh, completely. I was trying to kill myself without – you know, it was – they sometimes say it's the poor man's way of killing themselves. Like, I didn't have the courage to actually do it, so instead I would inject myself. And, you know, my last relapse, I injected myself with HIV without realizing it, and I am positive because of that. I had gone through years of not, you know, of kind of escaping from it, and I know that's how I contracted. I was careless and lazy about my needles, and you know, I didn't care enough about myself to really. You know, I just didn't care about myself. You know, it didn't matter. I mean, and I remember, like, even when I was injecting myself and using a used needle that I thought was my own, but I didn't really know. And it was one of those things where it flashed in my mind and, like, that this could be a dumb idea. But I was like, well, I don't really, you know, what's the worst that's going to happen? You know, I'll die. Like, I didn't care. And, you know, I found out I was positive 45 days into being sober this time. But instead of feeling like, oh my god, my life is over, what am I gonna do, I might as well just go use. Instead it was, okay, what do I need to do to take care of myself? And you know, I can't say which one of the things that happened to me over the last several years have gotten me to the place today where I can say that I like myself, where I am the happiest I've ever been, where I feel a sense of love for everyone around me, where I have a lot of joy in my life. If, you know, if I had to go through each one of those things to be in that place today, then that's okay. I'm okay with that because, you know, I don't know which one of those things was like part of the, you know, part of the gift that I have now of, you know, of in my life. You know, I'm about to take a really big step. I'm actually going to be moving. I'm moving to Los Angeles, where I have a lot of friends in program, and I'm going to be embarking on a new area of my life. And, you know, for me, being part of the fellowship has been a wonderful gift because it's allowed me to become the person I've always wanted to be. They have there's a phrase in the program saying that they say you'll have a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I can say that honestly today, I understand that and that I do have a life beyond my wildest dreams. Because in the past, my dreams were really, really small. I could only dream about the things that, you know, having money, having a job, like things that it was kind of very contained. The things that I'm getting in my life today, which again are not money, but are kind of experiences and life rewarding things, my thinking was so limited that I could never have dreamed of them. So yes, my life is beyond my wildest dreams because my dreams in the past were very small and limiting. So, you know, I've been through a lot, but it was worth it if I'm happy today.
You think if you stop going to a program, you could have a relapse?
Yes. You know, it's one of those things where I have to maintain it on it. I maintain it. I go to programs. I work through all 12 steps. I give back. I, you know, do service. Part of the reason I'm here tonight. You know, I believe that, again, just like the people who helped me when I needed it the most because I'd help them. You know, you need to give it in order to receive.
Adam, we have to break it there. Thank you very much for sharing. That was a great story.
Thanks.
Hope and inspiration. You're listening to Stepping Out.